Packers fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood here in our Lambeau Field office, where, guys, we have made it through the preseason and training camp, and now I guess the grind really begins. Ryan, before the game even started, Spoon and I were on our way up to the press box. We get in the elevator, and Spoon just leans against the back wall and gives this, like, world-weary sigh. He's like, buddy, you better strap up. We got 18 more of these to go.
I'm telling you.
Well, first day of camp, July 26th, I walk into the media auditorium, and I just go, is this season over already? So, you know, that's but you're right, Cassidy. The grind's just beginning.
And camp can wear anybody out. In a week, we're going to be excited. It's going to be fun again.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's going to be fun.
I enjoy games.
Spoon?
It's okay. I actually like training camp. To me, there's a lot of stuff to follow.
Yeah.
And then when the season comes, it's all restricted BS, you know, who's really hurt, who's not hurt. You know, that... just so much of it becomes injury-related stuff.
That's a good point.
And, you know, you're just, I don't know, chasing your tail sometimes.
There's something to be said about having open practice in training camp. To your point, restricted.
Yeah.
But this is reminding me of my first year on the beat, 2014. Every single game, walked in with Pete Doherty, and I asked him the same question every single game. Pete, you excited? And he's like, no, not really. I mean, you've been doing this for 3 decades. It's kind of the same old, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just want a game that has an interesting storyline somewhere, you know? And not every game does. Some games you have to force it a little bit. Some games doesn't come to you till really late. I mean, I like a good – I like a locker room after the game. I like to find out stuff that you didn't think you knew or thought you knew, and it doesn't turn true. I think the hardest part is probably the travel and getting through like the busiest days, like Wednesday. Once you get to Thursday, then I think it's okay. I could eliminate the Wednesdays. That would be all right.
Those are always a little bit tougher days. I wonder how much of the vibe will shift on Wednesdays now that it's Jordan Love instead of Aaron Rodgers. That'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it will. I mean, people are going to gather around his locker no matter what because he's the quarterback. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers' press conferences got to be like these psychological, you know, roundabouts, you know, and I just couldn't stand it anymore. And I don't know if Jordan Love's going to be even interesting. He's really kind of playing milquetoast at the podium right now, but we'll see.
Or real, the trash can as it is.
Yeah.
Well, that's
which
what
is
was,
where he's propped up.
Can we say one thing that Jordan Love is unequivocally doing better than Aaron Rodgers right now? I hadn't even played a game. One thing he's doing better than Aaron Rodgers. Not talking in his locker. He's talking at that bin, which is so much more spacious.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, good point. Yeah.
I mean, 10 years for you, 15 years of the guy at his locker, which...
You should explain what the bin is.
Yes, so Aaron Rodgers always spoke in front of his locker. And from my understanding, he did that because Brett Favre did it at the podium.
Correct.
And he wanted something different. Jordan Love is not at the podium on Wednesdays. Quarterback speaks one day a week. It's typically Wednesdays. Jordan Love is not at the quarterback or not at his locker. He's at one of the little islands in the middle of the locker room. So there are several, I think six total, islands in the middle of the locker room, and they are clothes bins and trash cans. And Jordan Love stands up against one of those. It does allow more people to get around him. From a camera point of view, we hate it, because it makes all the angles bad, and you always get someone changing in the background.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
It's horrible from a camera point of view, but, you know, it's just a different vibe. They all want to do something a little bit different.
With all your fancy schmancy computer stuff, you could just blur the background.
There are some things you can't unsee, Spoon. That being said, let's dive into Jordan Love's day against the Seattle Seahawks, the third preseason game. Score was 19-15. Again, scores don't really matter here. It's what they do as an individual and as an offense. I think what will stand out probably to Matt LaFleur is that all three of his quarterbacks led scoring drives. Jordan Love's was a touchdown drive. Clifford and Magoo both led a field goal drive. Jordan Love finished, I want to say it was 9 of 15 for 64 yards and a touchdown. And then he added a couple of carries for around 27 yards.
Three for 21,
something around that. He was asked afterwards about using his legs, and he's like, you know, I don't really do that in practice because that's when you want to work on the throws, but I've always felt comfortable doing that. We're going to get into it in a minute here, and his deep ball and what he did through the air, but just for a second, let's talk about Jordan Love using his legs, because for whatever reason, that's the narrative around him, is that he's a dual threat guy. Spoon, I don't think he's a dual threat guy. I think he's a pocket passer that can use his legs.
Yeah, I think he's the same as Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers ran a lot early on, probably because he faced more man coverage than he did in his later years. And also, he was a really good athlete and really good pocket presence. So he was always moving. I don't see Jordan Love moving that much. I mean, you know, he's adjusting and he can bail out, but I don't see him as a running quarterback at all.
Here's the thing, though. We have seen Jordan Love play, so he might want to say that he's always been comfortable using his legs, but he looks a lot more comfortable now outside of practice, in games, than he did early in his career. He is taking off at the moment he's going through his progressions. The moment he does that and sees the lane, he's taking off now, which is really important. It's a nice luxury to have from your quarterback to stay on schedule down the distance and get those five-yard runs. You get these three carries, 21 yards, seven-yard runs. Those are helpful, and he is, I think, much more comfortable doing that than he was his first couple of years.
Now let's talk about his deep ball. That's something that we've talked about throughout training camp that we've seen them working more on. He had a shot to Christian Watson. Pete Doherty and I were talking about it earlier. Best we can remember, it would have been around 40-ish yards on air. Does that sound right? Because they were at the 49-yard line for Seattle when he threw it. And so it would have been 40. If it had hit Watson in stride, it would have been a 49-yard touchdown. Instead, it was underthrown. Watson had to turn back for it, and two defenders crashed. It was an incompletion. There can be debate as to, you know, whether Watson should have come down with it, because I think he did get his hands on it technically. But fact remains, if the ball had not been underthrown, it's a 49-yard touchdown. Love talked about it afterwards. He took complete blame for it. He was like, I got to put more on that. Spoon, you said the other day you can't ever overthrow Christian Watson. Just put it out there. He's going to go get it. Here was something else that Love mentioned. He said a couple of times, I don't know if it was the wind. And he wasn't blaming it on the wind. It was very windy today in Lambeau. He wasn't blaming it on the wind. He was saying, like, that's something I have to figure out. And it got me thinking when he said that. He's obviously played preseason games here while he's been here. But anytime he's been fully entrusted with this offense, it's been in a different stadium. The Chiefs and the Eagles. As we are well aware, the wind is an opponent unto itself in Lambeau Field. And especially as you get later and later into the winter. So is that something that he just has to, quote unquote, figure out in this stadium?
Yes. I think it's the same as a kicker. I think you have to know where your spots are. I thought that he was throwing with the wind. But then the players all said that the flag at the top of the stadium was blowing the opposite direction that the wind was blowing in the stadium.
Well, because the wind bounces
in
that stadium. So if the flag is blowing one way, it's the opposite way on the field. And the way the ball was going, the flags were flowing that way. So that would mean at field level, the wind was bouncing back the other way.
Yeah, he was throwing it into the wind.
Correct.
So that changed my opinion a little bit on it, because it also kind of floated to the left, I think, towards the sideline. I don't know. I didn't get a real good look at it. A lot of people on the blog said Watson should have caught that it was in his hands.
100%.
That's what Twitter said too.
What my eyes said.
Yeah. Like I can understand that, but I think that goes back to my point. Yes, he should have come down with it, If the ball's put where it's supposed to, it's not even a question.
Well, yeah. Two things happened. Jordan Love missed a touchdown throw, and Christian Watson was so wide open that he dropped an easy ball. It was an easy, easy catch. It was, I mean, hardly contested. That's how wide open he was. Mm-hmm. So on both sides, something happened. But at the end of the day, that should have been a touchdown.
Yeah.
I don't know how many – I hate to bring him up, but I don't know how many times Rodgers missed Christian Watson. I mean, it always seemed to me like when he was open, he hit him in stride. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the one against the Vikings was
just Watson. An
unbelievable throw. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, against the Cowboys, he had some, like, deep overs, and he mm-hmm. seemed to hit him right in stride. So Love's got to do that. He has to do that during the regular season. He cannot underthrow that ball.
Is that just from y'all's experience with quarterbacks, is that just maybe not necessarily trusting yourself yet?
I don't know if it's a trust thing so much as it's a getting adjusted to a new receiver. Jordan Love's never played with a receiver like Christian Watson with his kind of speed. I think it says a lot, and this is kind of – it's been – chattered about a little bit, but the connection between Jordan Love and Romeo Doubs has looked mm-hmm. much more crisp than Jordan Love and Christian Watson, and I don't think that's a Christian Watson thing. I think that's Jordan Love and Romeo Doubs have been working together with the same personal yeah. coach for 4 years now, since going into Romeo Doubs' senior year at Nevada. They've been working with Steve Calhoun together in the offseason. Christian Watson and Jordan Love are still getting acquainted, and he's never played with a receiver the speed of Christian Watson. That's going to take some time. I think that you're going to see, to start the season, Jordan Love and Romeo Doubs on a much, much crisper wavelength than Christian Watson. And then eventually I think that you will see them catch up.
I thought today even, like, the rhythm of the offense was off because he couldn't get, you know, on some of those third and shorts, he'll hit Doubs on a slant, you know, for 5 yards, keep the drive going. I could just feel the sense that even though, you know, Malik Heath is a solid player, he just missed Doubs, mm-hmm. you know? And so I wonder how important he's going to be, whether he's going to even be more important than Watson this year. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch.
Doubs was held out of the preseason game with what was called a hamstring. Seemed to be more precautionary than anything.
He was kind of jogging around he was yeah. in a sweatsuit and he was playing catch with guys, so mm-hmm. it didn't look terrible.
They better hope so. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. They're going to need him week one.
Yeah. It almost makes me think of, like, how whenever Rodgers needed somebody, he went to Cobb. And that's going to be Doubs for Love.
Or Devontae Adams. I mean, let's yeah. face it. He had Devontae Adams. And how many times do we see Alan Lazard running free wide across the middle of the field and he's throwing to Adams?
It also kind of fits where Jordan Love's strengths are right now. Because Romeo Doubs can yes. go deep, but he works the middle, the intermediate very, very well. And that's where Romeo Doubs, that's where Jordan Love's strengths is. And the deep ball is what's still rounding into form for Jordan Love. And that's where Christian Watson's dynamite. You know, I mean, his speed, mm-hmm. hit full throttle. He's running by secondaries, but that's the part of Jordan Love's game that he's got to get developed and better at.
A reminder, nonetheless, that while this offense we don't think will be bad, is still very much a work in progress and is going to take some growing pains, take their lumps. That being said, let's kind of look at these other guys. This was really a day, even though starters played, Matt LaFleur wanted to see starters in there. This was a day for these guys that are on the bubble. They have to be down to a 53-man roster on Tuesday, and then they can put together a 16-man practice squad. That means a lot of people are going to be getting news over the next 24 to 36 hours. So, guys, I'm just going to go down the list here.
Well, let me ask you a question. Can I okay. ask a why?
I don't know. Submit it first and let me decide.
Question. Tell me one person, one or two people who did something today that earned them a roster spot or changed anything.
Mm-hmm. I've got somebody in mind. Ooh. I think I still lean towards it not happening. But I think Emmanuel Wilson are going to make coaches think real hard on whether or not they want to carry a third running back. because he's now put together three preseason games where he's
49 yards, 17 rushes. I don't know if that does much. I think it's much more, I was talking with Patrick Taylor, I think it's much more about special teams and pass protection if you want to be a third running back. He had a lot of yards. He had two attempts at a fourth and two, got it 1 yard on both times. You know, I wonder if that'll be in his mind. But again, at the end of the day, it's not about yards. It's about not behind Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. It's about can you pass protect and more can you play special teams? I'll give you a missed opportunity, I think. Austin Allen just still had not seen him play special teams until the very end today. If you're going to be a fourth tight end, you better be playing special teams. That's what Tyler Davis did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that is a position where you might only see three on the initial roster, but emphasis on initial. I think that Ryan Gutekunst will be scouring the waiver claims, the waiver wire, to see if he can pick up a fourth tight end that can be a special teams contributor.
Yeah, I said that on the blog today, that they will look for someone like Tyler Davis who's available. I mean, if they can do better with a tight end, then maybe they do that. But, you know, they could use another receiving tight end.
Mercedes Lewis doing?
No, that's not what they're looking for. They need another receiving tight end. I mean, Kraft is probably going to be a solid pro, but they could use another guy other than Musgrave who could stretch the field a little bit.
Well, that's kind of why when Tyler Davis went down, my mind went directly to Austin Allen because he is an intriguing prospect. He's 6'8". He's a huge target. Moves okay for his size. 2 years ago, he's a first team all Big Ten tight end at Nebraska. So he caught some passes. You got to play special teams at fourth tight end, and he didn't. And so to me, it's still an intriguing prospect, but a fourth tight end that doesn't play special teams but is an intriguing prospect is destined for the practice squad.
Okay, so who earned themselves a roster spot today?
Spoon, I don't know if anyone really changed all that dramatically.
Yeah.
I didn't see.
I didn't either.
I mean, I would say Malik Keith, but I felt like he was already a lock.
I think he was already on. Yeah. Or really solid.
Yeah.
The question there to me is whether or not Malik Keith is in position to be the fourth receiver now. And I'm not saying he is, but I think it's close. I think it's really close with him and Samari Toure. And that's going to be interesting to see how that unfolds.
I think they're going to do a lot like they did with Lazard. When they're running the ball, he's going to be in the game, you know, and they don't care if people know about it, and they'll line him up like, you know, that stack tight end or whatever and use him. I agree. I think he could be the number four. Mm-hmm. I think that's a real possibility, or game to game be the four.
And today to me was the first tangible evidence that could happen, because we've known for a while now that Malik Keith was going to be on the roster. That much has been apparent. But until today, he's the replacement for Romeo Doubs. He gets the first snap, false starts on the first snap, which isn't a great way to start it off. But then he catches three of his four targets from Jordan Love. And today was the first tangible evidence that he really could be the fourth receiver.
Yeah, I wanted to look. He got the most targets out of anybody today.
Well, they started him, you know. Yeah. So they started him ahead of Toure.
And four of those seven came from Jordan Love. I mean, Jordan Love was throwing to him, and he was catching the football.
He had four, so that means all of his catches came from Jordan Love, which means he was four in there with the
four of the seven targets.
Oh, sorry. Was he in there much with Clifford?
A little bit. Yeah. He had three targets.
Yeah, Clifford loves him.
He
throws to him. But I know, I don't think he was in there a lot with Clifford. Okay.
I think the bigger question, Spoon, would be, did someone work themselves onto the practice squad?
Yeah, that's a good question.
That's still going to be a good opportunity for some of these guys because, you know, they've got the three game day elevations they can use for a person. So someone, for example, you know, I think before this week we were questioning would they even keep Alex Magoo on the practice squad. I think they will.
I think he helped himself today. Yeah. I think he got sure himself did. Onto the practice squad, probably.
He had a pretty good quote afterwards. He said, I've had good days, or he said, I've had good, I've had bad, I've had indifferent. And I've had lumps, and I've had big plays. And the important thing is to just keep moving forward from all of them. I mean, that ball he threw to Jadakiss Bonds. Bonds might have had a little bit of a push off there. But that ball, it was a 52-yarder. It was perfect.
Yeah, it was. I can come up with some people I thought played themselves out of positions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we go through positions or do you want to go through names?
Oh, it's up to you.
I was just going to go down okay, to keep go us ahead. On track.
Go ahead.
I mean, quarterback, we know that says. Jordan Love, Sean Clifford. I think Alex Magoo played his way onto the practice squad, especially knowing that Brian Gutekunst has wanted him here for so long. I think he sees something there. Running back, we know that's Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. The question, of course, will be, do they carry a third running back, Ryan? And if so, who is it?
Well, first of all, I need to admit when I'm wrong. I know. This is a landmark moment in Green 19 podcast history here.
Do you have like fireworks that can go off?
I've been saying all camp that this is a GM that doesn't keep three running backs. I was wrong. Each of in his first five initial 53-man rosters, he's kept three running backs three times. It was Kylan Hill in 2021.
Oh, I forgot.
It was A.J. Dillon in 2020. And it was Dexter Williams in 2019. Now, either of you, what are those three have in common?
Well, Kylan Hill played special teams.
Yeah, Kylan Hill was a returner. Dexter Williams, I think, did some kickoff returning. And let's see, Dillon.
When Dillon was that, would that have been Dillon, Jones, and Williams?
Yeah, Jamal Williams. So that was, I mean, they were going to keep three because he was a second round pick. Dexter Williams was, what, a fourth round pick?
Exactly.
So
each of those were drafted rookies.
Yeah.
Each of them were drafted rookies. And what do we know? I think it says less about how Brian Gutekunst values or doesn't value the running back position and more about what we know about Brian Gutekunst, which is he really values his drafted rookies.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to usually keep them on the roster. Last year, he did not. One, he did not have a drafted running back last year. Two, it was so clear cut that Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, the divide between those two and the third running back was so clear that you just knew going into the season, as long as they stay healthy, they're getting all the snaps. Mm-hmm. They're going to be the two guys. And I feel like it's identical this season. There's a clear divide between Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon, and an Emmanuel Wilson, a Patrick Taylor. Even if Tyler Goodson was healthy, there was going to be a clear divide there. For that reason, and the other thing that Emmanuel Wilson and Patrick Taylor are not, is a drafted rookie. Emmanuel Wilson was an undrafted rookie. Patrick Taylor, not a rookie. For that reason, I'll say it's just Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon.
I think, so if I recall last year, I think Patrick Taylor was one of their last cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were probably wringing their hands over, how many tight ends did they have last year? Tyler Davis, Lewis, DeGuara,
Tonyan.
Okay, so they had four tight ends.
And there was a question on if they'd take five.
Yeah. Yes, there was someone else.
Who was it? Someone that would have been on the practice squad.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
And wide receivers, they kept six.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Okay, so somewhere there, that's an extra position, I think.
How many offensive?
A lot of times. Yeah, and it depends on that. But oftentimes it's like six receivers and three running backs, or five receivers and three running backs. I mean, it kind of works that way.
What's the phrase? You got to rob Peter to pay Paul?
Yeah, and so I wonder if the also to you know amplify your point is that if they keep six receivers or seven,
mm-hmm.
then that's going to cost a running back for sure. That'll be the guy who gets left out.
There were seven receivers last year.
Yeah, so there you go. I think that's where it balances. If they keep six, then they keep Patrick Taylor, in my view, because he's so good on special teams. I thought he ran pretty well today, and then he can block.
See, I think they can keep seven receivers and borrow from the tight ends. Because, I mean, let's jump to tight ends.
I don't think so. I don't think you can keep just three. I think that's not enough.
I think
on the initial roster?
Yeah, I think they'll pick up. They're going to pick somebody up.
I kind of think that it's – I get what you're saying, but I feel like that argument might be a couple years dated with this team. Because I think starting last year, they make bubble decisions based on special teams. And Patrick Taylor could be – but there's some guys on the defensive side too. I don't think they look at it at running back or receiver or defensive back. It's who's our best special teamers in this final list of four or five guys. Who are the best special teamers? And that I think that's how, with Rich Versace, they determine the bubble. So,
yeah.
You're saying somebody like Ennis Gaines could make it.
I think that's true. I think last year was a little bit different because it was the first year of Versace, and they were mm-hmm. trying to do everything they could for him.
And they were a contender.
Yeah. And so it kind of depends. Are they going to keep Eric Wilson, at linebacker, who's an excellent special teams player? Mm-hmm. So he's kind of an extra guy, and then does that cost Patrick Taylor his job? Mm-hmm. So I do think there is some correlation there. But, if they just keep six wideouts, and maybe they keep Patrick Taylor and then pick up a tight end and cut him. But it's not like Patrick Taylor is going to get picked up. I don't think he would.
To the point that you're making, Spoon, Emmanuel Wilson's the darling of this camp. He will be the NFL rushing leader through preseason, mm-hmm. all 32 teams. But I think that Patrick Taylor has at least as good of a chance of making the 53 if they go with the third running back as Emmanuel Wilson. And Emmanuel Wilson, he's a heck of a runner. He's a guy you want him on the practice squad because mm-hmm. he could. Patrick Taylor did not start last year on the 53-man roster. He started on the practice squad and he ended up playing nine games. He was elevated after they have three elevations for game day. He got through all three and then they elevated him. Mm-hmm. That could be Emmanuel Wilson. Especially if there's an injury to Aaron Jones or A.J. Dillon.
He's
a guy that can run.
Remember early in camp, LaFleur was using Tyler Goodson as a jet sweep guy?
Yep.
What if he decides, let's just keep him because he can add a little spark. We can use him on gadget plays. Now, he can't – again, that special teams thing just kills him mm-hmm. that he can't play special teams. But imagine him on a jet sweep.
What else kills him is the sprained AC joint. Which, mm-hmm. Tyler Goodson.
But I mean, I'm talking Wilson as that guy. I'm talking about Wilson as that stretch guy,
To your point earlier about, he had a fourth and two and only picked up one, you've got to be able to do that as a running back. Yeah. You should be able to pick up 2 yards if you're an NFL running back. That being said, his strengths are on the edges.
Yes, he's a perimeter guy.
And his strength, too, to me, is pivoting that foot and cutting downhill. He seems more of a downhill runner than a stretch jet guy. Mm-hmm. He's got really good size.
He does get around corners, though. Boy, when he gets around a corner,
he can cut down
the angle, it messes up the angles of the tacklers.
He's taking it. I also noticed several times today, because I started noting it whenever they did it, they purposely moved him into pass block, mm-hmm. which, you've got to be able to do, and I think they wanted to see him. I think he was on the field for those snaps to see how he had progressed in pass blocking.
I'll be interested to see those.
Yeah, I want to go back and watch those snaps in particular to see what he does. Moving down to wide receiver, we've said six or seven. I'm not going to be surprised if there's seven on this initial roster. Let me rephrase. 2 days ago, I would have said I'm not surprised if there's seven on this roster. After looking at how they used Grant DuBose today, I think they try to sneak him onto the practice squad.
I mean,
one target and it was a screen.
Yeah.
I think they were clearly stashing him. I think they were hiding him.
Yes.
We're
all in agreement. I very much think that Grant DuBose is likely to be on the practice squad and they keep six receivers. He's a seventh-round drafted rookie. Brian Gutekunst loves his drafted rookies. Brian Gutekunst kept Samari Torrey as a seventh-round drafted rookie last year. But Grant DuBose, he did an admirable job of catching up after the back injury that cost half of camp and all the offseason, but he did not have the preseason this year that Samari Torrey had last year. Samari Torrey led the Packers in catches and yards last year with 9 catches and 125 yards in the preseason. Grant DuBose in this preseason had 3 catches for 35 yards.
Yeah,
it's not the same.
Dontavian Wicks was playing pretty well up until he got hurt. Now maybe that's a knock on him that he gets hurt, but because wasn't he banged up last year at Syracuse? Mm-hmm. So,
Virginia.
Not Syracuse.
Virginia.
Sorry. I always get that mixed up. But they, at the time, before he got hurt, they were using him with the ones. Mm-hmm. They were throwing him in there in the slot and various things. So, anyway, I agree. I think we are in agreement about how that's going to look.
One last point on Grant DuBose. He was a 256th pick in the draft. Only three players were drafted after him. It's just hard to see how three catches and 35 yards in preseason is going to change the minds of other teams.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Because where he's shined has been in practice, and other teams aren't watching that. Okay, let's move on very quickly to offensive line. Do we still see them floating around 10, 11, maybe 12 guys?
Not 12. I think, I haven't put it to paper yet. But, you know, starting five, Zach Tom, Runyon, Jenkins, Myers, Bakhtiari, okay? Then swing guy is Rashid Walker, right? We all agree that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sean Ryan's going to make the team. Now, Yash Nyman. Could they trade him? Maybe. You know, maybe they could get something for him. Maybe he's part of a trade, you know, if they decide to get a safety or something like that. Who am I missing?
Caleb Jones.
I think
that's nine.
I think he's probably going to make it.
Yep.
I think Royce Newman might have played himself out.
I think he's gone.
Especially getting injured. That's an easy cut now.
I think if they can get a conditional seventh round pick for him, that would be ideal.
I think that they keep nine. I think they keep five offensive tackles. What's your thought when you hear five offensive tackles? I'm curious. I've said mine.
I think it. So it's Bakhtiari, Nyman,
Caleb Jones, and Rashid Walker.
Wait, I already said Walker. Walker?
Bakhtiari, Nyman, Walker, Jones.
Okay. I don't count. Well, Tom is a tackle, but I'd put him in more of like the utility guy.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting that they played him at center tonight or today, just to take another look at him. I still think Myers is going to be the starter, and I'm still a little skeptical about Tom playing right tackle. It's just not his best position, but, you know, if that's their best five, that's their best five. So
that's right tackle, yeah.
I think if you could parlay one of those tackles into something, I would try to do it.
Here's why I wouldn't. And the reason is they are so incredibly thin. It's really two problems. They're so thin on the interior when it comes to depth. I mean, they've got four, like, pure interior guys with Elton Jenkins, John Runyon, John Ryan, and Josh Myers. The other prong to that is David Bakhtiari. He barely practiced in camp. The Packers believe that he's going to be okay Sunday to Sunday, but that doubt's going to persist a little bit. To me, it's very plausible that at some point this season, while David Bakhtiari is your left tackle and Zach Tom's your right tackle, they might enter a game week where neither of them are available to play tackle because of Bakhtiari's status. And the thin depth that they have on the interior means Zach Tom is the top backup for all three spots. Having the luxury of three additional tackles, and especially with Rashid Walker and Yash Nyman, they might actually have to be your bookends for a game this season.
Maybe, but I just don't know about Yash Nyman. I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't know if he hit his ceiling, you know, or he's, you know, been down that people are taking a spot, or that he can't settle in at one position. But he's just not hit his stride like we thought he might be. Like, we thought he could be a starter. He should have been the starter at right tackle, right?
Yash Nyman was on the field. A second-round tender was on the field in the fourth quarter of the preseason finale.
Yeah.
I would not have guessed that going into camp.
That sort of tells me that maybe they're shopping him, too.
That was my next question. Does he have enough good tape from the past that a team is going to make a call?
God, there's so few tackles in the NFL that I could see someone taking a shot at him, but I just don't know what they could get for him.
What would you trade him for? What round?
Six.
Would you really?
Yeah. You know, because you're getting rid of $4 million salary, too, guaranteed salary. Maybe I'd hold out for a five. I don't know.
You're going to yell at me.
Yeah.
It'd have to be a three. he is a guy
There's
to
no
me.
No way.
And I'm not trading him because he's a guy that can play left tackle. He showed it in this league. You might actually need him at some point this season to do that. If not left, he started 11 games at right tackle last year, and it was not great right tackle play, but to get you through a week, you might need that. So if it's a third round, okay. But I would put a really high price on that because they have the luxury of contingencies on that offensive line with a left tackle that you think's going to be okay to play 17 games, but you don't know that. And really no depth on the interior. You need some contingencies.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Let's flip to the other side of the ball. Let's just go along the front, defensive line and defensive end. I think that's where they're going to have a little bit of a logjam.
Really? I think they're set. I think they have five guys and they are set. Who's the sixth that you would want to keep?
Well, you're going Smith, Gary, and Igbari.
Oh, no, I'm talking about defensive line. You're talking about outside linebacker?
Guys that can play defensive end too.
Well, they're not defensive ends. They're outside linebackers. Okay. So are we talking about outside linebackers or defensive linemen?
If
you want to go defensive line, Kenny Clark, Slayton, Wyatt, Brooks, and Wooden. There's nobody else worth keeping.
I've already done what I think will be my 53, and one of my last cuts was Jonathan Ford. He is a big body.
Oh, that's true.
Big body. I'm curious what you think on this, Spoon, because to me, it's a really tough call. If we did this Joe Lunardi style, he's won my first four out. But he's a big body. He's young. I think the dynamics of this defensive line shifted tremendously since the last year. Gone are Jerron Reed and Dean Lowry, and Colby Wooden and Carl Brooks have come in and shown, I think, in this preseason that they can play some snaps and give you some depth. They're not healthy scratches. You know, they can give you something. They're a lot younger there, which I think limits or lessens the need to have a developmental project like Jonathan Ford.
Yeah.
He gives you nothing on special teams. He was a 17-game healthy scratch as a rookie last year.
Right.
He could be TJ Slayton's backup at nose because really his size limits him to nose. But Kenny Clark's played most of his career at nose.
Yeah,
so if something happens to TJ Slayton, you put Clark back in.
Your backup nose tackle is a two-time Pro Bowl player. Right.
So those are all my reasons. Those are all my reasons for not having him on my 53. But I still think I think it's a tough call.
I think you made the point that to me is why you don't keep him, because Kenny Clark can slide in there and geez, can't do much better than that.
No.
So he offers no pass rush, Jonathan Ford, whatsoever. And this is going to be an up the field team who plays a lot of nickel, you know? So as long as Slayton's healthy, I think they go five.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Okay. And that was my fault. I was thinking of guys that do line up along the line at times. Let's go outside linebacker now. That is where I think there's possibly a little bit of a log jam, because you assume Rashawn Gary is going to be back for week one. It's not 100% certain, but you go Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, Lucas Van Ness, Kingsley and Igbari, and Igbari would be above Van Ness on the depth chart, in my opinion. And then you start looking at some of these younger guys, you know, what do you do with a guy like Britton Cox, who's a UDFA, could have been a draft pick if not for the off the field. I mean, he was released from two SEC programs. He was asked about that after the game today, and he said, you know, that it's something that he and Brian Gutekunst haven't really talked about, but he knows that's in the back of his mind. And he's like, you know, I just hope he sees me out here working, and maybe that rubs him the right way a little bit.
I talked to him kind of in depth after you left about all that, and I'll try to write it up. But he had to keep his nose clean here. I think he made the team. I think he's in.
You do?
Yeah,
I think
he's too athletic to let go. I mean, this kid was a five-star recruit out of high school, and he goes to Georgia and Florida. I mean, come on.
And the key thing to me is at a premium position.
Yeah.
That you want to – if you got a guy that you can develop at one of the most premium positions on the field.
Yeah.
You keep him. So I have him on my 53 too. He was one of my last guys in because he didn't do much specialties. To me though, he's a developmental project at a premium position, and that's a guy you keep.
And if he's and you have a zero tolerance, you know, policy. If mm-hmm. he screws up, then he's gone, and all you're losing is a UDFA. Mm-hmm. But I think he's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, he's so athletic.
Kind of what was going through my mind is, would you rather have a developmental outside linebacker, edge rusher, or a third running back, or a seventh receiver?
Yeah, or a fourth safety or something like that.
The developmental outside linebacker wins in every case.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Other than a tackle, I would say he wins.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point about it becoming a premium position. You have to have that position in today's NFL with the offenses that you're facing. I mean, some of these other guys, I'm just kind of looking through who played today. Keyshawn Banks, I mean, he's had a decent camp, but mm-hmm. I mean, he's practice squad guy. They're going to get an extra spot for Kenneth. Mm-hmm. I mean, so he's... I wouldn't even worry about him. They get that extra spot free and clear, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then there's no one else on here that really jumps out. You know, Mosby's a guy whose names we've heard called a few times in games. I think that's more the position he plays than the athlete he is.
Yeah, Justin Hollins.
Justin Hollins. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he plays a lot of special teams too, right?
He's a guy I think they want to
keep. I feel like
that's six. Mm-hmm. OLBs. I don't mm-hmm. know. I don't know if they can do that.
One of those is a developmental project.
Here's the thing. They've seen what they can get from Hollins, and they know he went in and sort of Eric Wilson's middle, right? Yeah. With Hollins, they know he can go in if need be, like he did last year. He's not going to be a game changer like Devondre Campbell, but he can hold water for you if you need him.
Yeah, and, you know, Van Ness is just not going to offer him that much early on.
Right.
Maybe towards the end. I mean, they're going to want to play him, though. You know, they're going to want to play him as a first-round freaking pick. So
do you,
if you keep Hollins, then you're taking away snaps from Van Ness. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
That's a fair point.
Do you, to back to this point, I mean, teams have tape on Hollins. He's going to get, if he's cut, he's probably going to get picked up.
Yeah, but he was also available in the middle of the year. The Rams cut him, and, you know, nobody picked him up.
Here's how I see the outside linebacker depth chart. Rashawn Gary, coming off an ACL. He's looked pretty good, and at some point this season, I would think he's going to be Rashawn Gary, probably sooner than later, but he's coming off an ACL. Preston Smith. Kingsley and Ibarri's look good. If Rashawn Gary doesn't start week one, and I think he will, but if he doesn't, it's Kingsley and Ibarri. Mm-hmm. Lucas Van Ness, developmental project, is going to take probably most of his rookie year. Justin Hollins, depth guy that can, as Van Ness is developing, and, you know, just because you want him to play snaps doesn't mean that he's going to be able to play a lot of snaps, especially early. I think that gives you a four-man rotation at the very least. He's a guy that can be a fourth rotating outside linebacker. And then you've got your developmental Brenton Cox Jr. There's a few positions where you just can't have enough depth. And the Packers, for the longest time, have not had depth at outside linebacker. Now they do. I don't think you give it away.
If Hollins makes it, then Eric Wilson doesn't. Because I think you look at them as comparable special teams type guys. And you know, special teams veterans. Eric Wilson's a really good special teams player.
I think Wilson's a better special teams player.
Probably.
And got more, again, this was due to injuries and ejections. Eric Wilson got more on-field action than Justin Hollins last season. So, again, you know, they kind of know they've at least got somebody there.
Yeah, so to me, that's the question. So, are you going to just say, all right, we're going to play through Van Ness? They played through Gary when he wasn't playing all that great, right? When he was a first-round pick. His rookie year, he didn't play that well.
Van Ness is going to take a spot on the roster no matter what.
Yeah, he should be playing. He's a first-round pick.
Right.
You know, you can't just not play him at all. So that's where I think the question about Hollins comes in. Like, if you keep Eric Wilson, then can you afford? Anyway.
So early on, I kind of foreshadowed that I'm a little light on offense and a little heavier on defense. I've got them keeping Justin Hollins and Eric Wilson. I also have two running backs and three tight ends and six receivers instead of seven. Mm-hmm. That might be something that evens out if they find a fourth tight end. Then maybe they have to make that decision. But for me, on the initial 53, I have them keeping Hollins and Eric Wilson.
Okay. Okay, cheesehead. Let's move on down our list here. Corner, do you think they keep Jair Alexander?
Oh, we didn't do inside linebackers yet.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Oh, because we were talking about Eric Wilson, and so I just started thinking about him. I mean, Quay, Devondre, those are your two locks. Those are your two starters. But how long is Devondre Campbell out with an injury? You know, Brian Gutekunst, Matt LaFleur have tried to make it seem like it's not going to be long, but I haven't seen him back on a practice field. Have you?
No.
And so
still
to the point about Eric Wilson, do they keep somebody like Eric Wilson just because they know he knows the defense already?
Well, McDuffie will be the number three.
Oh, McDuffie, that's a great point.
Yeah, he'll be number three. And then do they keep Tariq Carpenter, who's a good special teams player?
Right.
And then Eric Wilson.
Here's my thing on Tariq Carpenter.
That's five.
Yep. I got the same five as you. My thing on Tariq Carpenter is not only that he is a core special teams player, which is probably making the team, not only that he's young, he's 4 years younger than Eric Wilson, which is, you know, significant. They moved him to linebacker this offseason because they had a hunch. They thought this guy might give us some coverage ability in the box that is valued in today's league. And if you're going to move a guy positions on a hunch because you think there's upside there, I think they're going to be patient enough to keep him. And say nothing about the special teams, which I think is why he's making the team, but I think they want to see this experiment through.
Yeah, I don't know. He seems to still think he's a safety.
He does.
And I'm wondering, like, I didn't see anything. I expected him to be pretty proactive, like really shooting gaps, and because he's really physical. And he had a really nice open field tackle today. But I don't know. I think maybe he is a safety. Maybe they should. Just don't keep any of the other guys, keep him, you know?
Lo and behold, they might need a safety. But it makes me think about like Rudy Ford, who asked for a trade because he wasn't being played where he wanted to on defense. You know, that'd be mighty bold for a second-year guy to go in there and demand a trade because he didn't want to play linebacker. But
no, but we'll get to safety and we can talk about it. Then I'll talk more about Carpenter and then we can.
Okay. But, I mean, you're saying five at inside linebacker?
I'm not sure about five. That's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot.
Because think about it. You're going to use two. They're going to be on the field all the time. McDuffie hardly ever played unless someone got hurt. And then you're taking one of those guys off the field when you go to dime. Mm-hmm. So how many of those guys do you really need?
Well, you're looking for depth and special teams.
It could just be McDuffie and Wilson.
Two of those guys are two of your top special teamers, which is Tariq Carpenter and Eric Wilson. And so starting last year and same this year, I've divorced my mind from thinking strictly positionally, which is very different than the past, but I think they – it's I get what you're saying. You know, Rich Bisaccia's first year last year, and they were contenders, so you want to be good on special teams. But I think Rich Bisaccia's still in the building, and he wants to make sure his team's units have their best guys. Tariq Carpenter and Eric Wilson are two of their best guys. Tariq Carpenter is very different than linebacker three Isaiah McDuffie. Isaiah McDuffie is a fine, okay run defender. He doesn't give you much in coverage. Tariq Carpenter doesn't give you much as a run defender in the box, but he can play coverage. I mean, he's a safety, converted safety. So they complement each other well. But to me, again, it just comes down to special teams. I don't think of it as like, oh, they're keeping five inside linebackers. I think of it as like they're keeping some of their top special teamers.
I mean, to all of that point, could McDuffie be the casualty there?
He's linebacker.
Good special teams player, really good special teams player, and really knows the defense. You know, good early down player if they lose one of those two guys, and then, you know, the other guy can play dime. So I think he makes it.
So do you think they can sneak, like, say it is Carpenter or Wilson, if it's not five, if it's only four, do you think either one of those guys gets picked up, or could they get them onto the practice squad?
I think they can get through the practice squad, but I think if they're on the 53 and that both of those guys are active for special teams. They're playing. They're active on game day.
We about to run out of spots here, guys. Yeah. okay, let's look at corner and safety. Let's just look at DBs. I mean, you know, Jair Alexander, Rasul Douglas, Darnell Savage. Those three are
Keyshawn
in. Keyshawn Nixon. Gosh, thank you.
And now
Carrington Ballantyne. I think he's a lock. I think Shamondre Charles was on the 53 last year. I'm trying to remember.
Yes. He's a very good special teams player.
Yep. Right.
But I don't think he's going to make it.
Just because
I think
now they
go with five corners.
Nixon and Ballantyne.
Yeah.
I mean, have him on mine. But
so, actually, what is it? Four corners. It would be, Alexander, Douglas, Ballantyne, Nixon, and I think Stokes goes on PUP. Mm-hmm. And then when he comes back, they have five.
And here's one for you. I think last year Corey Ballantyne was on the practice squad all year. I don't even know if they bring him back on the practice squad. Because to your point, when Stokes comes back, they probably got to move some people around.
I don't know. Corey Ballantyne is not bad. I mean, I think I thought he was better than Keandre Thomas, you know? Or they're pretty close to the same.
I have Corey Ballantyne on my 53.
On your 53?
I do. Yep.
Wow.
Development.
Ooh, bold strategy, Cotton.
His,
how many guys do you have on defense?
I know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But they're so light at. So
you've got 70 guys on this 53 man roster.
No, I got 53. So my breakdown is two quarterbacks, two running backs, three tight ends, six receivers, nine offensive linemen. All across the board, that's on the lighter side. So I wonder if Brian Gutekunst wants balance or if he wants to keep his not just best players, but most promising players. And Corey Ballantyne has been pretty darn good in coverage. He was rotating with the ones last week. It's not entirely bold. I mean, he's at least a practice squad guy if he doesn't make the 53. But I have five defensive linemen. I've got six outside linebackers, five inside linebackers, six corners. Six safeties, three specialists. Added up, that's 53.
So on defense, you have five, six, six.
Are you including Stokes in that?
No, he's PUP.
Okay.
You have five defensive linemen, six outside linebackers, five or six inside linebackers?
Five inside linebackers.
Okay, so that's 16.
Yeah.
Then you got six corners.
Six corners, six safeties.
28. Wow.
28, 22, and then
the
three.
You could split those up and field an entire team.
I don't see that. I can't see them keeping just 22 guys on offense.
Yeah.
Because you got to have some backups.
My thought is that at the very least, I think you're going to see a fourth tight end, and maybe that's when a Corey Ballantyne gets released. Like, this is very, to me, this is one of those years that's very much an initial roster. Mm-hmm. They don't have a fourth tight end. I don't think they need to keep three running backs. So I think they're at the very least they're keeping a fourth tight end, or they're going to have a fourth tight end. But I think that's a waiver wire claim.
Because when you look at safety too, I mean, they've got to keep Levitt. He's your special teams de facto captain.
Right.
And so you're keeping Levitt. That takes up a safety spot. And then
Savage. Rudy Ford.
And then what do they do with Jonathan Owens?
Gone.
Is he even on the practice squad? Or do you think a team picks him up?
No, I would cut bait on all those guys. I would start over. I mean, I think you could live with three safeties to start.
Savage, Ford, and Levitt?
Yeah. And
Anthony Johnson Jr. I think he's on the 53.
Yeah.
I think at the very least they look at him as a special team.
He's what, a seventh rounder?
So
maybe, yeah. He's the fourth.
I'm going to duck under the table right after I say this.
You're cutting Moore, too, right? Tavarius Moore.
I have Jonathan Owens making the team only because he was on all the first-team special teams units today in the final preseason game. Now, I that's the one of all of them. That's the one I've got to do more thinking on because if it was me, I would release him. But you kind of base these things off what you see, and what you saw today was he was on all the special teams.
You know what? I changed my mind halfway through that question. Because I was going to say, it's not insane for an owner to step in too, but I don't think Mark Murphy has that pull here.
He would never do that. Ryan Gutekunst.
Other teams have owners that will step in on roster decisions when they are thinking about things from a PR perspective.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. I think part of the thinking with Jonathan Owens, too, is if you keep him after week one, you got to pay his salary for the whole year. So do you – now, you could keep him and then cut him on Saturday before the Bears game, you know, if you finally find you have another safety. His salary isn't that big. It's $1 million. It's 1.01 or something like that. But that means, you know, you cut him and at some point in the season he's not that very good. So you got to make that decision at cut down whether you want to keep him or not.
What an interesting candidate. I mean, this is a guy that's been on the wrong side of the cut down day, started 17 games as a starter. I mean, and could get cut again. What a weird career.
The other thing is, so this was going to be my point about Tariq Carpenter, is why not move him back to safety? Jonathan Owens can't cover anybody.
Right.
He's a box safety. He was a good, real good box safety for the Texans. Mm-hmm. I think he led them in tackles.
He was second, but he was also second in the league in safety tackles.
Yeah, and is Tariq Carpenter that much different? I mean, you know, Tariq Carpenter can't – he's pretty much a straight-line guy, so he's going to have trouble. We didn't bring up Ennis Gaines, by the way,
he's a great special teams guy too.
Yeah, but I think he kind of lost his job today when he looked terrible.
Corner route?
Yeah, and in practice he got burned on that two other times.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're playing Carrington Valentine in the slot now. They start playing him in the slot. He was in the slot today.
That's interesting.
Makes me wonder if they just go without him.
Let me pose a couple questions because I'm working this through in my head too. Would you keep Jonathan Owens over Jonathan Ford?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Owens.
Would you keep him over Grant DuBose?
Right now, yeah. And that's just because he's done more, it would be easier to sneak DuBose on the practice squad, in my opinion.
I'm with you.
If you were just asking me from a player standpoint who I like better, I like Grant DuBose better than Jonathan Owens.
I think he's got a lot of potential.
Now, I'm not putting in the perspective of who they already have, six receivers. I'm just saying I like Grant DuBose better than Jonathan Owens.
I'd agree with that assessment.
Would you keep Jonathan Owens over a third running back?
No. Well, I don't think I'd keep him over Patrick Taylor. Yeah, so no. I'm not a big fan. I'm just not a big fan, as you guys can tell. And I could be totally wrong. These guys might value him a lot more than I do. But
I'm with you. I'm not a – I saw that preseason debut in Cincinnati just like you did, you know. But my last question, do you put stock in Jonathan Owens being on all the starting special teams units in the preseason finale? How much stock do you put in that?
That could be a test.
Just to see.
You know, just to see whether he can play himself on. What bothers me about him is that he had the starting position.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had it in his hands and lost it and let Rudy Ford take it back. In fact, he let Tarvarius Moore take it for a couple days, and then he, you know, couldn't cover, and so they go back to Rudy Ford. So that's what bothers me about Owens, is that he didn't take that job and just run with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. If I hadn't just seen Jonathan Owens on the starting special teams, he would not be on my 53. To your point, I think it's a very fair one. It could have been a test. Defensively,
did he pass the test?
Not keeping it defensively. I'm not keeping him defensively.
Let me pose your question back to you. Would you keep Anthony Johnson over Grant DuBose?
It's a good question.
Probably.
I think I would.
Probably. He's got he's got speed for a safety that is pretty unusual, especially mm-hmm. for a guy his size. So yeah, I would.
Okay. I mean, they're both seventh rounders. You could probably get both onto the practice squad. You know, where do your numbers fall there?
I think they're going to be in the market for a safety, too. Mm-hmm. I think they got to do better there.
Didn't I say that last week? I think Savage's co-starter is not on this team.
Yeah,
yet.
You did. I don't think they can trade for Buda Baker, as some people are suggesting, you know, a five-time Pro Bowler who's trading for Buda Baker. Well, he wants out of Arizona.
Can they afford it?
No.
They sure could use him, but.
You know, unless they could figure out some way to redo his contract, you know. It would be a good addition, you know, like if you were going to make a run, like if you were a team was going to make a run like last year, then I would consider it. But right now, I don't know that I would.
Look, we're on the final Saturday of August right now, and I feel like we can already say that next year we know what the top two draft needs are. It's safety and left tackle. Mm-hmm. Like that's what's going to be at the top of the list. And
Could be a running back, too.
Yeah, could be.
But not that they'll do that in the first round.
But. They could be walking away with two first-round picks, depending on how things go in New York. Have y'all seen the Mark Murphy clip where he's like, 65%?
I think it's a good 65% chance that they're drafting a left tackle.
65% of the time, it works every time.
And a safety in the first round next year. Like, that's just – it's such a – two huge positions of need. On both sides.
I know we could debate this all day, but we have gone over an hour, so let's look at special teams. Your kicker, I think Anders Carlson has proven himself that he can. He might still have some lumps, but he's very good.
He is their kicker.
He's got a leg.
They're not going to cut him. They just are not going to cut him. He's their kicker.
And they're just going to carry one. I mean, that's not a...
Yeah, well,
just want to clarify for the record, it would just
no,
be one.
No, absolutely not.
Do we think, and I never pronounce his last name right, Orzic, that's going to be the long snapper over Hatcher?
Yes.
And I think where it gets a little interesting is at punter, because both have proven capable. Whelan has such a leg, but Pat O'Donnell, Spoon, you made a great point earlier in the week, so I want you to get into it longer. That while they are working through some lumps with Anders Carlson, Pat O'Donnell could be that steadying force there for him.
Yeah, if I were picking just on straight punting, I would take Whelan. Not that he's better than O'Donnell now, but he's got a chance to be like
a
really good punter. And he's a decent holder. But Pat O'Donnell, he's held for Robbie Gould and Mason Crosby, two of the most, you know, two of the top 11 field goal makers in history. So he knows a lot about kicking. I talked to him about it, and he's already given him an advice. He told him to stop popping these balls up. Mm-hmm. Like, stop kicking them up in the air and drive the ball. Stop thinking you can, you know, put it up in the top of the goal posts and drive it, which is what he did today, and he did it against New England, too, on that 52-yarder. So I think O'Donnell sticks.
And to your point, just to add on to your point, too, think about it. Before O'Donnell was here, he was with Chicago, so he's very familiar with the NFC North.
Right.
So when Anders Carlson is walking into these stadiums for the first time, you know, it helps that Minnesota and Detroit are domes, but when he's walking into Chicago in late winter and it's cold, you know, Pat O'Donnell's familiar with it, can give those pointers.
Yeah, and here's the thing to never forget, though, is that he ranked 28th in gross and 30th in net average last year. And had two blocked, but those weren't his fault. That was blocking. So are you going to – you're probably going to, you know, rank in the lower third of punting again.
I think you're spot on, Spoon, and I think that Whelan ends up on the practice squad to be groomed to be the punter for 2024. And Pat O'Donnell is a free agent going into the final year of his contract here. And I think Daniel Whelan's your 2024 Packers punter.
Unless he gets claimed.
Unless he gets claimed, it could happen. Probably not with a punter, but you never know.
Where did Bajorquez went to Cleveland, right? Was that the same year?
They released him.
Yeah. And then didn't he, I don't know if he got claimed, but he wound up in Cleveland eventually. I can't remember if that was the same season or was the following year. It's probably the following year.
Mm-hmm. But they do typically keep a punter on the practice squad, or at least they did last year.
They can with 16. You know,
yeah. Did they keep a punter on the practice squad?
No, they've kept a kicker before. I know.
I thought they kept a punter last year.
Didn't they keep Molson on the practice squad?
Yeah, that was the COVID year, wasn't it? Yeah. When they were worried about guys getting COVID.
But with 16 players on a practice squad, you can keep a punter on the practice squad.
That's true. Yeah.
Maybe Molson's who I'm thinking of. I know there's been a punter on the practice squad one time I was here. And then, I mean, this is not taking up a spot, but, you know, Nick, since you're kickoff returner, Reed's probably going to be your punt returner. They tried Torrey there as a backup. I don't know if they want to keep him there as a backup, but they know they've got him.
Torrey,
yeah.
Yeah, I thought he caught punts really well. I mean, he had one where he screwed it up, and he wound up with a really nice hands catch as he fell back on his butt. You know, that was a heck of a catch.
I think I said something one night in a game when I was like, yeah, that wasn't a great return. And Pete Doherty was like, well, it's a punt. It's going to be barked wherever it lands. So it's 6 yards more than they started with.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he's not afraid. They are all the anti Amari Rodgers. Right
now. Low bar.
That's a great point. You can't be afraid. And that was something that Nixon said about both Reed and Torrey. Like, neither one of them are scared to take it and go.
No.
And that's half the battle.
I didn't see that in Reed. He looks so natural catching the ball. You can bet he's going to be their starter.
Yeah. And then I'm trying to think if there's anyone else that we haven't gone over or positions we haven't discussed. Is Matt LaFleur the head coach? Is that going to stay? Are they keeping him around?
Yeah. Will they put Joberry on another level up? Put him in the press box?
Will they put him in the birdcage at the top of the stadium? Is he going to be setting off the fireworks?
The higher he goes, the better the defense plays.
Is he going to be setting off the fireworks? You know, I don't think I mentioned this on the last podcast. I talked to Quay Walker last week just about calling the plays, and I asked about Joe Barry being in the box, and he said the plays get in quicker with Barry in the box.
I believe that.
And so, you know, do they force him to stay up there?
I think they did. I would bet you, you know, he's so excitable on the sideline, and I don't think I think he's probably calmer. I don't know this. I'm saying, I think, like you said, he gets to spread all his stuff out. He's more organized. I don't think a defensive coordinator should be on a sideline unless he's a real veteran dude, you know.
As I said, we can probably go on for hours about this. And if people would allow us on this podcast, we could go till Tuesday when we'll have all of the final answers. I'm just going to give you both your final 60 seconds here. Don't go longer than 60 seconds.
Spoon, I only need 15.
Okay, Spoon, take your 15 seconds.
I think there will probably be very little surprise with the 53. I mean, there will be some, you know, shifts where we'll go, oh, that's interesting that they kept this many of that and that many of that. But I think the roster is set, and I think it's a pretty good roster. I think, you know, I think they got a lot of good young talent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if their draft picks this year can kind of lift them a little bit, then they got a chance to be okay. But I don't think the roster day is going to be as exciting as it's been. I don't think we're going to have a Josh Sitton type day.
I said it earlier, and my emphasis is that to me, when I look at this potential 53-man roster, it is very initial. I think they are lopsided on offense and defense, heavier toward defense. I think special teams is still a big consideration, especially with Versace in the building. But to me, it is very much an initial 53, and I think that you're going to see moves with the waiver wire and post initial 53-man roster from Tuesday to week one.
They have a better spot on the waiver wire this year than they usually do too, right? Because it's based off draft order?
Mm-hmm. It's based on last year's record, yeah.
Yeah, which correlates to your draft order. Well, whatever happens, Spoon will be there for you all day on his live blog. He's
starting about 7 a.m.
at the butt crack of dawn. Lord's not even up that early to start the live blog to keep up with every move as the 53-man roster is set. And then we'll have full coverage for you. Matt LaFleur speaks on Sunday. It's only Saturday. Oh, wow. For some reason in my head, it was Sunday.
What?
Today's only Saturday.
Because yes. This is a game day. Yeah, I had that whole thing happen to me last week.
LaFleur will speak on Sunday, and then players will be back in the building for a official practice on Wednesday. We think they might be practicing on Tuesday, a little bit up in the air.
No, I think
that's... Were you saying that if they make it, they're asked to come in for maybe like...
Yeah, I don't something. Know. I don't know what's going on.
They'll have an official practice on Wednesday, and we'll be here to cover it for you as they get ready to head into week one next week, or week after next, depending on how you say it. Versus the Chicago Bears. Guys, go home and get a little bit of rest, or at least try to, before the rubber really meets the road here. Thanks so much, as always. This has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.